Okay, we continue in our series, Romanticizing Life. And tonight, the topic I want to look at that we can easily romanticize is sanctification. In God's covenantal order, we see that hierarchy or authority structure, the chain of command, so to speak, is an integral part of how the kingdom works. If you remember the five-point acronym for covenant, we have transcendence. Second point is hierarchy, the structure that God has ordained, the authority structures to function in His world. Now, God is the supreme authority over all things, but then He has ordained different structures to carry out His rule and His authority under Him. They are representatives of His authority, but they have been delegated positions of authority. And what are some of those structures? Church, family, state. Those are the general three that you can understand. Those three spheres of authority that God has ordained and established. And each of these spheres have leaders who are responsible to rule in their sphere according to God's word. When leadership is bad or weak in these three areas, society disintegrates. It literally falls apart. How important is God's blessing upon these areas if society is to prosper? So it's fundamental. The blessing of God upon the leaders and the family, the church and the state is absolutely vital for the preservation and the advancement of any society. God blesses righteousness and He judges wickedness. In Numbers 22, when Balak, the king of Moab, wanted to destroy Israel, he went and found the corrupt prophet Balaam and said to him, "Come and curse this people." And Balaam came and was unable to curse the children of Israel. But he went back to Balak and he said, "But I have an idea. Let's get them to sin so that God curses them and judges them." So that was his strategy, to get the nation to sin and then God would judge them. In the key positions of leadership in God's kingdom, in the family, the church and the state, which gender has God laid the responsibility of leadership upon? Okay, men have this responsibility. And I assure you, Satan still uses the Balaam plan against God's structures of authority in order to destroy God's people. And when you're focusing in on your plan of attack to attack your enemy, which is what the kingdom of darkness is doing, they focus it in a more intense way, I assure you, upon the leaders. That is a more direct attack. The devil and his minions, both demons and people, they are finite, which means they can't be everywhere and doing everything. They're limited in their abilities. They're not omniscient like God. So their limitations mean that they have to pick their battles. And as far as the kingdom of darkness is concerned, the strategic focus for maximum impact is to attack leadership in all these different spheres of authority. Because in that way, they will impact the kingdom of God, they'll impact everything. Where would you concentrate your assault? I would do the same. If I was trying to assault a people, I would concentrate on the leadership in that way. Undermine the leadership and you undermine the whole work. You either remove men from leadership, which is what the feminist movement does, replaces them in their positions of authority and leadership, or you corrupt men who are in leadership, or you corrupt men who are preparing to be leaders. So you corrupt them, and what have you done? You've basically given yourself the playing field. You get them to give into sin so that it controls them, because then the power and blessing of God will not be upon them. Now all believers are called to fight against remaining sin and to fight against all the assaults that come upon God's kingdom. Men and women alike, all believers are meant to do that. However, I want to draw your attention, as leaders and future leaders, to the reality of the spiritual warfare that is directed at you. You're in the crosshairs of the enemy's strategic assault against God's kingdom, and thus you must expect the battle to be intense. That must be your presumption. This battle is going to be fierce. I'm in the front lines. Whether you like it or not, that's the fact, and that's where the assault is going to come against you. Your sanctification is integral to the unfolding of God's kingdom plans, and thus you must not have a romantic view about the battle against sin and the battle against darkness. You're engaged in spiritual warfare, only the enemy, to the kingdom of darkness obviously. You're not only the enemy, but you are officers in that kingdom that he's fighting against. You're officers or officers in training, and you will have great influence upon the kingdom of heaven for generations to come. That's the reality. If you're a male, that's where you are. Now, obviously, ladies also have an influence, but I'm speaking to men tonight, and so I'm drawing your attention to that emphasis. We live in an instant world where people want to see swift results. We want it sorted out quickly, done and completed. They want to plant today and reap tomorrow. and their sense of worth and success is often determined by how quickly results can be identified and measured. So I want my results to be seen instantly. I want some instant fruit to this so that we can measure this and then I can gauge and find the encouragement to continue or whatever it is. This mindset, however, impacts believers and gives us a false impression about how things move in God's kingdom. One of the areas it impacts is what we are looking at tonight, and that is sanctification. Instant answers in sanctification. We can become frustrated and discouraged because there aren't instant answers in this area. God in His wisdom did not ordain there to be instant sanctification. He could have quite easily done that. But rather, He ordained there to be a growth in sanctification through struggle, vigilance, faith, prayer, and all these things. To mature us and develop our character, God in His providence allows us to be buffeted by the kingdom of darkness and also by our own sin. But He has promised that we will never be given temptations that we cannot resist. As 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13 assures us, it says, "No temptation has overtaken you, except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it." So being a believer marks you out for special attention from the Prince of Darkness and his minions. Being a male increases that attention, and then whatever level of leadership you assume will incrementally increase that focus of attention upon you. This is fact. It's a reality. Now, one of the qualities of leadership is assuming the responsibility that is placed upon you. That's a character quality of leadership. I've got this responsibility, I identify it, I see it, and I'm going to feel the weight of it. I.e. put my shoulder to it and carry that weight. Being a man means that God's kingdom has been ordained to move forward upon your shoulders, and vital to the effective forward movement of the kingdom is our growth in godliness, our becoming more like Jesus. Jesus was not exempt from temptation and suffering in his life on this earth. As we're told in Hebrews 4 and verse 15, he was in all points tempted as we are, in every single way. And in Hebrews 5 verse 8, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. Luke tells us that when Jesus was in the wilderness, in Luke 4 verse 2, he was tempted for 40 days by the devil. He went up there to fast and pray for 40 days, and during that entire time, he was tempted by the devil. This wasn't the only time of temptation that Jesus endured, but it was a particularly intense period. And it was only after that period of 40-day temptation that the three temptations come out, where Satan confronts Jesus. He had endured that 40 days of constant temptation, and then the three came out with the stones into bread, jumping off the pinnacle of the temple and having God lift him up and bowing down to Satan. So Jesus was indeed tempted in all points as we are. Though Jesus was being qualified to be our perfect substitute through this time of temptation, he was also being prepared to be the high priest who is able to sympathize with our weaknesses, as Hebrews 4 verse 15 says. So he could identify with us in our struggles, because our struggles were going to be part of the whole unfolding and working out of God's kingdom. So we've got a high priest now that has endured that so that he can identify with us as we too walk through that same path. So it's God's plan, it's God's purpose for us. So he is to help us in our fight against sin as we become more like him. And the reason we become more like him is so that we can glorify God. Now, you can romanticize sanctification by thinking that sinless perfection is possible in this life, and thus greatly perverting the holiness of God and his law word. Now, John Wesley taught that. He's a great hymn writer. For the most part, his theology is very suspect. So don't jump at a systematic theology by John Wesley, if you see one. He believed in sinless perfection, but in doing that, he's romanticizing what holiness looks like, what sanctification looks like. I don't want to spend too much time on that, because I don't think that's a challenge or a danger for us in this group, that we believe in sinless perfection. If you do want to deal with it, you can get a massive work by B.B. Warfield, where he dealt with this in great depth, Studies in Perfectionism, I believe it's called. But I don't think many of you have that doubt or question in your mind that that's a possibility. I.e. being sinless in this world, or attaining periods of sinlessness. The other and more dangerous way that sanctification is romanticized in our context is to believe that it is or ought to be an easy thing. I'm saved, this should be an easy walk. I've accepted Christ into my heart, this should be easy from now on. Those kinds of things. That's where we can romanticize sanctification. You know, once we do the fight this one skirmish over this one issue, and let's just move on from there. Now it's kind of downhill all the way. We move on without hindrance. Part of the hardness that we are meant to endure as good soldiers of Christ has to do with our constant struggle against sin. against all that in this world is constantly raising its head against the knowledge of Christ. Our own wills constantly chafe against the will of God and against God's ways. And so much outside of us pulls us away from God's wisdom. There's traditions and ideas and popular opinion that is constantly pulling us away from His truth and His ways. This difficulty is ultimately God's ordering. He does not intend this path we are on to be easy, because He knows what is required to perfect His children, and in the process glorifies His own name. So this journey of being conformed into the image of Christ is not meant to make us frustrated and despondent. We are not meant to throw our hands up in the air in desperation and give up. Because if we do, it is because we have romanticized sanctification. We have failed to realize what this battle is that we're involved in. I studied in seminary with a young man who graduated and then became a youth pastor in a church. His father was a pastor of a church as well. And after a few years of ministry, he committed suicide. I found out later what had pushed him to do this. It was from being overwhelmed with the struggles against sin in his life. I didn't know that he was struggling, but he was struggling with homosexual feelings. And he was working in this ministry, and he said, well, how can I continue in this ministry and have this struggle? And so he took his life. That was his answer and solution. He decided it was a hopeless cause and thus took his own life. Now, suicide is self-murder. Never forget that. Suicide is not an option for a believer. That is not, because Christ has said you will never be tempted with a temptation that you cannot overcome. So we need to believe that, we need to realize that. To reach a position where you're so desperate and thinking of contemplating to kill yourself is a sinful position. The way of escape that God has promised in our temptation is not suicide, but victory through the grace and power of God. To become despondent about the struggle against sin is to misunderstand maturing in the kingdom. The fact that you are convicted that something is sinful and wrong is evidence of life, and life is from the Lord. I am struggling. This is the evidence of life in my life. Now, you don't increase the strength of that life by killing it. God has promised to complete the work that He has begun. And so right theology is vital if we're going to be effective for the kingdom. The Westminster Shorter Catechism, question 35, tells us that sanctification is the work of God's free grace, whereby we are renewed in the whole man after the image of God, and are enabled more and more to die unto sin and live unto righteousness. That's what sanctification is. We're being renewed, we're dying more and more into sin, and we're living unto righteousness. The Westminster Confession, in section 13, tells us that through sanctification, the dominion of the whole body of sin is destroyed. So this whole work of sin, the dominion of it is destroyed in the believer's life. And the several lusts thereof are more and more weakened and mortified, more and more put to death. It says that this work touches the whole of who we are, yet it remains imperfect in this life, because some remnants of sin still remain in every part of us, which brings about an irreconcilable war of the flesh lusting against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh. And it says in section 3 of that chapter 13 of the Westminster, it says, and I quote, in which war, although the remaining corruption for a time may much prevail, yet through the continual supply of strength from the sanctifying Spirit of Christ, the regenerate part doth overcome. And so the saints grow in grace, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. See, the Westminster has no romantic view about what sanctification is in the Christian life and the battle against sin and growing in righteousness. It's a struggle, it's a war. It uses those terms that are very provocative. Sanctification has to do with freeing us from sinful habits. That's what it's doing. You see, the dominion of sin has been broken in the life of the believer. He's no longer a slave to sin. However, the believer has many habits that continue to influence him. They're like ruts he falls into. The old long-practiced ways of thinking and doing things are ruts. Like you'd get on the Oregon Trail, deep holes in the ground where hundreds of wagons have gone through in the soft earth. And eventually you're coming with your wagon and you can't but get into one of those ruts. That's what habits do. They make these deep grooves in your life. We do what comes naturally to us. So habits can be hard to break, but they are not to be compared to being under the dominion of sin. My friend who took his own life failed to make this distinction. Habit and the dominion of sin. And you've got to realize, as a believer, you are not under the dominion of sin. You have a habit that needs to be broken. When you equate habit with slavery, then you'll see no way of being delivered from that habit that you're in, and no way for release from slavery, and then you'd be pushed to this thing of suicide. The Westminster Confession acknowledges this battle and the intensity of the struggle by calling it a war. Yet in the light of God's word, it points to the victory and the certainty of that victory. What we read, Westminster chapter 13, section 3. In which war, although the remaining corruption for a time may much prevail, yet through the continual supply of strength from the sanctifying Spirit of Christ, the regenerate part doth overcome. And so the saints grow in grace, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. So there can be this intense battle, there can be this great struggle at times, but you need to realize what the truth is on the matter and what's actually taking place there. As you battle and stand by faith in God's grace and promises, relying upon His almighty power, power that He wields on our behalf, as Ephesians 1 and verse 19 clearly says, the habits of the flesh are weakened, they are strangled. When we practice our habits, those bad habits, we strengthen them. Whatever habit we practice, good or bad, we strengthen that habit. It's like feeding them. When we, by God's grace, stand against bad habits and don't do them, we starve them and they are weakened. Now, they don't die instantly. It can be a prolonged battle because sometimes those habits are big, strong, muscular things and the throttling of them to death takes time. It's not an instant occurrence. When a habit is strong, it becomes kind of reflex and things will be brought to your mind because it's almost like a reflex. You respond to it. A sound, a smell, a thought, a situation brings you back into that track. There was this habit. It triggers the reflex, and thus the habit can appear to be overwhelming because every time I see that thing or I have that experience, bam, I'm back in that groove again. And so you need to realize, okay, I know what's happening here. I know what's happening. This is not the dominion of sin. This is a habit, and I need to break that. And the way I get that groove worn away so it's no longer so obvious is by standing against it by God's grace and in His power, but believing indeed victory is possible and attainable. Christian life is not for the faint-hearted, but rather it's for the courageous, for those who are not afraid to get involved in the battle. It means getting in there and doing violence with all that opposes the will of God. This is what Jesus taught in Matthew 11. And verse 12, when He said, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. It's exactly what He's talking about. Ruthlessness in dealing with that which opposes God. We have to be prepared to enter into the intense war against sin, against everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Sin is aggressive. It doesn't maintain the status quo. It doesn't say, okay, are you happy with your place there? I'm happy with my place here. Let's come live together, have peaceful coexistence. It doesn't do that. It says, no, this is all or nothing. It's absolute dominion. And that's why there's unstoppable ultimate conflict between the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of darkness, because both are absolute powers that will refuse to tolerate each other. There's no possibility of peaceful coexistence. Winston Churchill was very insightful. And before he was prime minister, Neville Chamberlain was prime minister still at this stage, there was great negotiations going on with Hitler. And Hitler was building. He was building his forces, arming himself at no end. And Churchill said back then, he said, guys, if you want to make a fight with Hitler, let's do it now. Let's not give him more time. Let's not wait. Let's get in there and mix it up now. And they didn't do that, and they held on, and Chamberlain kept pushing for this peace, until eventually there was no more chance of peace, and Great Britain was launched into the Second World War. And then they had to deal with a Hitler that was incredibly powerful. And you know the details of what transpired and what it cost. But this is how it is with sin as well. The longer we leave it, there's only one thing it's doing. And that is gaining in strength and ability and armaments. The longer we allow our sinful habits to remain unchallenged, they are digging in, so to speak. They are strengthening their positions, deepening their grip upon us. Moreover, they are never going to go away. That's what you've got to realize. This is never going to leave me. It's going to be here, and all it's going to do is going to be strengthening itself. The only way to deal with our habits is by warfare. Brutal warfare. Sinful habits are only going to move over when you throttle them. They don't understand any other language except tight grip around the throat and constant pressure. And there's the slow suffocation or slow starving to death. The longer we leave them, the more difficult the change will be. Our battle is to be in the grace and the power of Christ. But make no mistake, it is the battle. This battle is at the very heart of the kingdom. This is where the whole turning of the kingdom strengthens or wanes. God's kingdom advances primarily through godly men, because they are the God-ordained leaders in all spheres, in the family, the church, and the state. We need men in our day to step up to the plate and to assume their responsibilities of being godly leaders, of being good soldiers, of violently strangling bad habits and replacing them with good godly habits. We need men who will not become weary in this war against sin. who not become despondent as they seek to keep their grip around the neck of the wriggling, thrashing around bad habit that wants to exert itself, wants to have free rein as it's had before. We need to cling on by faith and believe that the strength of that habit will diminish. The more we squeeze it to death, the more it weakens. And it is noticeable, and you can see it. As you resist and as you fight, its strength wanes and decreases. Sanctification is not a romantic walk in fairyland. It's bone-crunching battle, and at times unrelenting battle against an enemy more violent, more subtle, and more tenacious than radical Islam. It's worse than that. It's something that is out for complete and utter ruling and destruction. Unless we gain the victory here in our own sanctification, we will not be able to deal with the other areas in this world, like radical Islam and oppressive centralized government. As 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 20 says, "In understanding be mature." Or as the King James Version says, I like this translation, it says, "In understanding be men." Our responsibility as men, as leaders, as protectors, starts with us waging war upon sin in our own lives. We must become godly leaders. That is, we must become sanctified leaders, prepared for the intensity of the battle and unafraid of the increased focus of God's enemies to tear God's men down. We must stand by faith, relying upon the Lord's enabling and strengthening to wage war, unrelenting, unapologetic war against every bad habit in our lives, against every sin, and replacing them with good habits, with those things that exalt the kingdom and enable us to be effective leaders. Any questions, comments, or clarifications, or illustrations? All right, well, why don't we spend some time in prayer?